Don't you think that if you would have acknowledged that sooner and recognized that other people can print, you would have subbed stuff out and worked on sales?
No, I still don't like subbing stuff out because our 80% is still better than most people's 100. I'll say that without shame.
Stahls.com. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stahls is the leader in heat printing solutions. They've got a code too, Hustler20, that saves 20% on your next DTF transfer order. Equipment, transfers, or support for your business, they are there. Also, they are running an incredible amount of live events that I find very fun and helpful to be at, partially learning everything, but also partially picking up and meeting a bunch of the people there. So that's really cool. Definitely check that out. Multicraft Daddy, head over to Instagram to multicraft_daddy. If you need ink supplies or daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies have been around for over 50 years, providing the industry with top brands at competitive pricing. Dave is amazing in a way that really helps people. He wants to go meet with them, wants to talk to you. He truly wants to help your business. Reach out. And not only that, if you DM him your email address, he's sending out gifts like PMI tape every single week. Not only that, he's got some fun industry tidbits and videos that he makes on his Instagram profile. So check that out, Instagram_daddy. Graphex Source. Graphex offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and any other shop management softwares. When it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, they have been around for over 40 years in the game. Hit them up and use the code PrintavoPod24 to get 50% off your first order to give it a try. They've obviously got full-time staffing solutions and then ad hoc as well, plus tons of other stuff. Check it out, graphxsource.com. Last but not least, Easy Way. Easy Way is continuing their monthly giveaway, $250. Easy win. Go to easyway.com/giveaway, put a reminder the first of each month and drop in your email address. They make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Also, an incredible team there too. I mean, they've got a really, really great support system to be able to help you as a shop be able to grow your business, especially in the reclaim side. So don't miss the giveaway. Go to easyway.com/giveaway. $250 in product credit. It's the easiest way. All right, let's jump on in. What's going on, boys?
Oh, not a whole lot. It's working as usual. How about you?
The YouTube channel has been quiet, unless it's not on my feed for some reason.
No, I haven't made a video in quite a long time now. I'm working on that right now. I've got a couple cooking. I just got to get some more time to edit them. I got a lot on my plate right now and stuff.
What's consuming the time?
The business is a big one. Obviously, we're growing at like a very crazy rate. The DTF business also kind of took off. That was something I didn't really expect. So I'm kind of managing that right now. We got our new building getting built right now. It's about to start. So that's another thing. And I've been developing a Shopify app in the background as well. So there's some other stuff. And it's endless, man.
That's amazing.
Wait, what? Can we talk about all the things you just said, Lee? You're building a new shop again?
Yeah. That's the real big project right now. It's needed. Like we outgrew the space within, I don't know, the first 6 months I was here. But now at this point, like it's unworkable at this point. Like we're bumping into each other all day. There's boxes like everywhere. You have to like squeeze in between everything to move around the shop. It's ridiculous. So
how many employees do you have right now, Lee?
I've got six, I think. Six. Yeah. So and we need more. I just can't physically fit more people in my building at this point. So that is the big project going on in the background right now. We're jumping from, I mean, between all the buildings that I have here, because I've got like my main shop, I've got my garage packed full of equipment, and then I've got one of those like construction trailers parked beside the shop also. So combined between all those three things, right now we have only like, I don't know, 2,000 or 2,200 square feet between the three. And I'm building 10,000 right now.
Are you building it on your property? Are you going to put it somewhere else or where's that at?
I bought a piece of commercial land in a brand new industrial development that's being built right now. So that was kind of my long-term play anyways. I wanted to buy a piece of land to get the business away from my house because I've learned just how much that sucks as you get bigger. And also kind of like my retirement plan as well. I bought a big enough piece of property that I can build multiple units on this thing. So that's going to be kind of my long-term play.
When's it going to be done?
The real estate game. Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's where the real money's at. And my mom's been a real estate agent for like 30 or 40 years or something like that. So that kind of helps. I've got an in the game.
When will that be done, Lee?
It was supposed to start already, but I don't know if you guys have ever built anything from the ground up before, but it's like one setback after another, just waiting for permits and drawings and plans and things like that. And we originally, like, I had the architectural drawings done and that was supposed to be the end of it. And then I went out in my front yard one day. Thankfully I have a big yard, because I went out and I laid this thing out in string, and I looked at it and I was like, this is not big enough, because I originally was going to be like 6,500 square feet, and I just stood back, was like, nope, not even close. So I went back and set it up to 10,000 square feet, and because we crossed over this threshold, all of a sudden now we have to have all these other drawings made, like engineering plans and electrical engineering things and blah blah blah, just keep stacking up. And then every time one of those things happens, and another permit needs to get pulled and whatever. So we're so many months behind schedule right now. The plan is to hopefully have like shovels and dirt by fall time, and then they can start actually doing stuff, and then hopefully the hardest part's over.
Have you shared where you're at revenue wise?
Not really. No, I don't really talk about that much. Like, we're in seven figures now between adding the second business in there and Rogue Lab as well.
Yeah.
And we're climbing. Because
I thought I saw a video about $1 million somewhere.
Yeah, that was like,
I can't remember where it was.
First crossed that threshold. So I was like, sick, this, I can actually like use this video title because I know it's going to get views. So that was a big thing. And I was like, and I can do it without bullshitting people. So I did that then. And then now, yeah, we've grown exponentially since then. And the addition of the DTF business, that thing has, it's taken off like crazy, man. Like, my initial goal for it was, I thought was a high bar, and we almost doubled it in the first year. And then now we're only, what, 6 or 7 months into this year two, and we've already surpassed what we did in the prior year.
So, Lee, you're selling transfers on, is it roguetransfers.com? What is it?
Yeah.
Okay, Rogue Transfers, and you're open about it. You have the Mamaki. And you're selling transfers through gang sheets, and you don't like some gang sheet apps on the market, I imagine, as I've seen or heard. We'll leave that one off for a sec. How are you? Are most of your customers in Canada, or do you have a DTF manufacturer in the States? Talk to us about that.
No, we're shipping, I'd say, 50% or more of our orders to the US. Because we are, the way that we're making this stuff, like through all the different components we use, and because our manufacturing's here and blah, 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 we were able to just cross that threshold of being made in Canada, so it can cross the border duty free, which is nice. It took me a long time to get that classification, but thankfully because of that, yeah, we're able to sell it to the US. So we got multiple Mackies here printing all day, every day. It's to the point now that we need more, but I don't have space for more. So now I'm trying to figure out how I can train another person, maybe come in and work a night shift just to keep those printers running nonstop.
Wow. Do you have an auto cutter yet?
No, right now we do not cut them. That's something I want to add. We just don't have the space for it. And that's kind of the next phase. When we get to the new shop, that whole department has its own like 3,000 square foot space where we're going to have multiple machines going. We got a flatbed going in there for, because we do the stickers and stuff too. So the flatbed's going to serve multi-purpose, and a few other cool little gadgets.
We are about to order an auto cutter like in the next week. I like the DTF station ones right now. We have a couple DTF station machines, and they're just built well. They're just built well, I think. We don't have any issues with them. We really like them. They've been pretty solid. So we got the Roland, we have the DTF station ones, and then we're going to get the DTF station cutter, because we just want to start cutting more precisely so that we can start being a little bit more robotic with our transfers. So what, Lee, like, what percentage of your business is that transfer business now?
It's grown a lot. Like, originally it was just like kind of it was supposed to be just a way to keep the printer kind of running, like the original one that I got, because I was like, there's no way we're going to have enough DTF transfers within Rogue Lab to keep this machine running all the time. And those things need to run, you know. So I just originally started for that, and it just kind of took off, especially after I developed our latest transfer, which we've just named, and we're going to start marketing now, called the Flexform Transfer. Like, I've gone as far as developing some of my own products to get the transfer better, softer, stretchier, all that stuff. And since then, like, it's just went. So I would say now, in terms of revenue, side by side, like, Rogue Lab's still miles ahead, but profitability wise, it's inching closer. I would say it's getting, it's about like 30% now.
To run a profitable transfer business, is it getting enough volume to cover the overhead of running it? And then you can scale it for quite some time? Or, because now you said you also want to add more people to run it as well. So does the overhead also kind of climb at the same pace as the top line? Or how do you like to look at it?
It's actually gotten better as I've grown, because now I'm able to order the supplies in like giant, giant bulks versus before. So now I'm able to get my supplies way cheaper than I did before. My bills when I order the supplies are astronomical now, like ordering tens of thousands of dollars in ink at a time is absolutely absurd. But the volume definitely plays a huge part in it, especially selling wholesale too. So we're selling at wholesale prices. So we're significantly lower, especially for the US people. That's why I think why we're so attractive to the US customers, not only because it's me and because we developed a better transfer than most of what's out there, but because with the exchange rate, not having the duties, like at our wholesale cost, people are paying like 0.18 cents per square inch or something from us, for a transfer that kicks the living shit out of bigger companies like Stahls. So that's, I think, the biggest thing. Like, and I'm just going to say that straight up. I don't care. It's so much better.
but Lee, you're running a DTF machine that I put one in my dumpster. Yeah, couldn't stand it. So we can push back on you a little bit. What makes your transfer so much better than the competition, given that you are using a DTF machine that I threw away?
Same parts, same ink technology. Like, the ink technology hasn't really varied too much between that and some of the DTG stuff on the market. It's all very, very similar. What it really comes down to for DTF transfers is the powder. The powder is the biggest variable in there that determines whether a DTF transfer is good or whether it's bad. And it comes down to the same thing for screen printed transfers too. There's screen printing transfers that feel like shit as well, and some that feel really good. And that comes down to the adhesive. And that's what I've said for years, that, you know, this stuff is never going to look or feel better until that adhesive technology improves. And we've searched and searched and searched and finally found kind of what we were looking for, and then started playing around with things like the films, because the films can play a part as well, obviously, in how it peels and how the ink loads onto it and things like that. But certain films will give you kind of different micro textures to the transfer almost too. So it'll give it like more of a velvety soft feel versus a plasticky feel. So things like that, we played around with a lot of different combinations and different things from manufacturers, and then finally found something that we were looking for. And what we got now, it's working.
So why not double, if Rogue Transfers is crushing the market and you specifically sell to a creator community, because that's the community you've built of like shops that are just starting up and now everyone can get a heat press, from a business standpoint, why wouldn't you just triple down on that now and just forget the rest of the crap that you do?
I mean, I want to do it all. The nice thing is that I've systemized my business so well to this point that I'm not really needed in a lot of areas. So I'm able to kind of do a bunch of different stuff. Like the transfer business, that thing runs itself for the most part. I do maybe 10, 15% of the work. And I have not marketed that business to this day. I've done nothing whatsoever on that. It's just organically grown since day one. So that's something that I want to start pressing down on the gas with a little bit, is the marketing aspect and growing us. It's more waiting till we get into that new shop so we have the capacity to be able to handle what's going to come in. Because I mean, with the organic growth that we've had over the last year and a half, whatever it's been, if I start actually pushing this thing, I can't imagine what it's going to do.
So how do you balance it then? I mean, two different growing businesses, you know, you talk about all the other, I don't want to say minor stuff, but like the building and the other stuff. You said you systematize the wholesale decorating side. What do you mean by that? Like, do you have someone sort of running day-to-day type things with five people? What does the structure look like there to help make it really systematized and smooth?
Yeah. So the biggest thing was, it was last year, the year before, I think it was, there's a video on my channel where I just discovered systems and going down the path of like lean manufacturing and things like that. And that was life changing. I embraced that fully and started going as hard at that as I possibly could and getting my team to buy into the idea as well. That was the biggest one, was getting them to do it. But since then, yeah, the systems have made such a huge difference. Like being able to get something as difficult as screen printing to the point where like my newest guy can get in there and knock stuff out and it's at a good level. Like that was not easy to do, but being able to do that, that is huge. Cause so many shops will look at screen printing and think that like they need an expert being able to do this stuff. No, you need a good system. You need an expert to make a good system and then you walk away from it.
But what do you mean? Like even more specifically too, like, is he watching videos? Is he like looking at the Marcotte, like screen print GBT to ask questions or did you spend a ton of time with a good assistant or what?
Yeah, it's all the internal stuff that I've built. Basically, I've dumped all my knowledge into various different Google Docs that these guys can access. And there's troubleshooting steps in there. There's basically everything, and all of it's accessible through QR codes all around the shop. There's no videos because I found right away that videos end up just wasting time. People are sitting there on their phone and then all of a sudden they're scanning Instagram or whatever, or the shop's loud and they can't hear what's going on in the video or something like that. It didn't work. So once I started building these step-by-step Google Docs, that's when I started seeing it really, really click in these people's heads. So we've done that for every aspect of the shop for the most part. I'd say we're about 75% done. Like there's still a lot more to do.
How'd you do it? It was just sitting in a room locked in, just type.
Pretty much, yeah. I just started with the low-hanging fruit. I started off with the easiest task in the shop, which was mixing ink, and that was where I started testing the waters. I put my, at the time, was my, he's not here anymore, so I don't care, he was my dumbest employee. I got him to test it out, and I was like, if you can follow this step-by-step and get the job done, because you've never done this before, then I know this is going to work. And that was right away. He got it done within 20 minutes, something like that. I was like, perfect. So I'm on the right track. And I started using that formula for everything and started with the easiest stuff that was draining my time and my energy that I just should not have a part in, and just started working my way up the ladder as I went. And now I'm to the point where I got to start doing it for like sales and marketing and some of the other stuff that's like the higher level tasks that I'm doing now. And then hopefully running the whole business so I can hand it off to my production manager at some point and walk away.
Do you do like every Friday? Like, cause I found the constant maintenance of it was really important too. Like, you know, it's like you can hustle through 50% of it, but then it's like anytime stuff comes up, edit the guide, create this, update that. Do you try to block out time to do that? Or how do you keep everything moving forward and updated?
Anytime something comes up, I fix it right there, right now. That's the biggest thing, is stopping and fixing it the second it comes up. Otherwise, it's never going to happen. Yeah, anything like that. That's a huge concept in Lean, like especially in like the Japanese side. Those guys are all about the stop and fix mentality. And so I really, really jumped on board with that because I know myself and I've got ADHD brain and I'm going to ping pong around in a million different places or whatever. So if I don't do it right there and then, it ain't going to happen. So that was the biggest thing. And I started doing it right there. And we have a way of tracking this stuff too. We have a Monday board where we track all these different improvements and tasks and things like that. And people can throw their input on there and whatever else. So we can physically see this stuff getting done. And we kind of gamified it a little bit too. So we have a tracker on that stuff as well, like a dashboard. So we can see who's making the most improvements in which areas and whatnot, and kind of compete a little bit, which I'm smoking everybody to this day, but they're trying.
I want to talk about writing the perfect procedure, or maybe the imperfect procedure, because a lot of shops I talk to do not have a lot of things. One, they don't have their procedures documented. Two, they don't have a place to access them. Three, some of them that they write are so hard to follow. You're like, what the heck, right? So like, what are the basic rules on writing a procedure that you swear by that has to happen every single time when you go to make one?
Well, first of all, like a procedure is never going to be perfect. Done's better than perfect in that case. It always get it done, start making improvements, build it from there. But the biggest thing is build an SOP for, again, I'm going to say it just straight up, build SOPs for the dumbest person you can think of reading it. You have to like make it as simple as humanly possible. Like it's got to be understandable by like a child. So keep them very short, very to the point, you know, color code certain things, bold certain things, 1-2 sentences maximum, include a photo in every single step, make it so that it's impossible to mess it up.
And then talk about accessibility. Like I've heard you say, or maybe I've heard Scott say this, like you have to put the answer where the question is. Can you elaborate on this a little bit? This is a big part of Lean that I think we miss a lot.
Yeah. So that's more or less going to come down to like just saving time and saving resources, right? So if the question the answer exists somewhere, you know, people are going to find it one way or another, but just making it so that it's findable right there in the moment, right where you need it kind of thing. So that's for us, like we try and use a lot of live signage and stuff. So like in our reclaim department, that whole SOP is right beside that guy's head. And that's typically the first place.
Wait, what do you mean live signage? Like an iPad?
No, it's a full blown printed sign, a giant one with the photos. Okay. It's
like those workplace one type posters. That's,
yeah, we got a huge, like, I think it's like a 28 step sign kind of thing with photos. Everything's color coded with like the labels of the stuff in the booth. It's all like, there's no possible way that you can mess this up. So that's typically where we first day employees, we send them in there and just go read that sign on the wall, follow the steps, get it done, and zero training involved. It's fantastic. So we use that for a lot of different stuff. Anywhere we can fit a physical sign, we're putting it there. Anything else, then it's a live QR code right there, right on that machine that goes to, here's our step-by-step doc on this thing kind of thing. And then sometimes we'll even put QRs going directly to certain steps rather than just like the full SOP. Cause like screen printing, that full SOP is massive. It's got tons of different information in there. So we'll start segmenting it out depending on where that person is standing and what code needs to be there.
Are you responsible for making these, or is there someone else that does it, Lee?
This is all me right now, and that's one of those tasks that I want to get off of my plate. I'm trying to develop a way to simplify this a little bit more, because right now it involves too many steps and just too much stuff. Right now I have to like build the Google Docs out myself, take the photos, or sometimes I'll have the team take the photos and just dump them into like our Slack chat or something like that, so I can put them up later. And then I got to, you know, make the QR stickers, send them to the sticker department, get her to print them out, all that stuff. So it is kind of a high friction process right now that I'm trying to solve. I think I can solve that now with the ability to code and build my own stuff, which is kind of cool. So I kind of want to build it into like an app shop management type of thing. We used to have a thing we did that with called Gemba Docs that works pretty well. It's just super expensive and still lacking a ton of features. It wasn't quite hitting it for us. So we got back off that, went back to Google Docs, but it had the right concept.
How do you do it, Steven? You have a ton more departments now and people and all that. So like what have you found that sort of works at your scale?
Yeah, you're doing all kinds of lean stuff. I've been seeing your photos popping up. I like that stuff.
So actually, about a month ago, someone on a call called out one of our employees. Now, I think we've 60 employees, including production, sales, marketing, you name it. And that doesn't include our team in the Philippines and Honduras. They're like, we have shit everywhere. Is there ever going to be a time where we start to centralize things?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, Molly, you're right. We do have shit in all these different places, and I don't know if we're ever going to be able to centralize this. And like, she stumped me because she was so right that production has their own stuff and their own Notion boards. And some people are using Google Sheets and some people are using Google Docs. And it's kind of like the flavor of the day. And I kind of let every department do it. So, as a byproduct, and this is because we have all been vibe coding, like every department's been vibe coding their own apps, which I think is super cool. Every department's been using their own version of Claude Code or Gemini or OpenAI. And so we're starting to centralize things, and we're actually building our own internal app called the Campus Inc. app. That's like a launch pad for all the internal tools we have, all the internal training we have, a directory of employees. We're actually going to like offboard Notion, because a lot of people just use Notion for view only. And we're trying to make it like one centralized place that the company can use as like, it's just kind of a little project that we're doing. So we were using so many different point solutions, and now we're finally starting to do our own thing. And I think Lee, you're kind of doing the same too, right?
Yeah, very similar. So I started off with that, about a month ago, something like that, a little more. And then, it was working, but not working at the same time. You know what I mean? And I started realizing, like, you know, I'm putting in these prompts and getting these things built, but like, I don't understand them. I don't know what it's doing. And I want to understand that. I don't want to just build some shit, slap it all together and make it work and just not know what the reasoning is behind it or any of that stuff. So I started kind of, as I was doing this stuff, I was getting these different AIs that I was using to like spit out reports, and then I'm putting them into other AI platforms to teach me all the different things that this thing just did. And like, here's some different documentation or videos to watch on these subjects and blah, blah, blah. So I was using these vibe coded things to teach me how to actually code at the same time, which like at this point I think is not really that useful of a skill, because like the AI stuff is nailing it 99% of the time. It's more or less being able to understand what it's doing, so that when the AI stuff inevitably does make a giant mistake, because it does all the time, being able to troubleshoot and fix it right there on the spot.
Interesting. What tools are you using? What does Lee Stewart's AI tech stack look like today?
So my favorite by far is Cursor. Cursor's incredible. Like that thing can do some serious, serious work, especially if you're using it in the way that I've been using it. It can do some pretty amazing things versus just going in there and throwing prompts at it and whatever else. Typically, I'm using that. I'm using a lot of ChatGPT. So the ChatGPT is typically like my information resource. I'm using that to do like research and things like that. It's super, super good for that. And then I'll use Claude for doing like web crawling, things like that, because it can control my browser, obviously. And I'll get in there and I'll start using other apps and things like that and get it to kind of read the dev tools and what it's doing and be able to kind of pull ideas out of there for me and get them down on paper so I can feed that back to ChatGPT, get the research done on it, figure out what it's doing, how to do it myself, and then pop that back into Cursor again. So I'm doing like a weird little circle back and forth, and man, it's working.
I don't know much about Cursor.
It's such a cool tool. Like it can make or break people, right? Like it can make smart people way smarter and it can make dumb people way dumber. It's just depending on who's using it.
I have found that as well, like in other people too. It's like, okay, the C player is just accelerating C level tasks and pumping out more crap, and the A player is doing the same and pumping out more A level stuff.
They're using it to expand knowledge and get better and, you know, things like that. That's the cheat code versus just letting it do it for you and not learning anything.
So do you guys know who Bill Gurley is? If you don't know who Bill Gurley is, you should look him up. He is one of the biggest, best tech investors of all time. We're talking like Uber, DoorDash, Zillow, prolific individual. And obviously he's like getting older, and he gave this talk on finding your fascination and kind of making a career out of your passion. But he actually quoted Mark Cuban, who recently said there's two types of people: those who use AI to learn everything, and then those who use it so they don't have to learn anything at all. Essentially, people that use it to accelerate learning, and then people who use it to avoid thinking. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, is like, this is just helping you learn faster, right? Versus teaching you not to learn at all. And I think that's probably the biggest like misconception for some individuals, is like, it's actually just like a thing to help you learn super, super, super fast. I thought that was a cool quote.
Relatively similar. Not to someone the other day, I said that to one of my employees, because they were talking about using AI to just cheat their way through something. And I compared it similarly, where I said, you know, this is kind of like, you think of like a machine gun, right? You hand a machine gun to a certain human being, and it's a tool that can change the world. Essentially, it can change countries. It can do all this stuff. You hand it to a monkey and it's a fucking hammer. that's the difference between it. And, yeah. And you see a ton of that. A lot of people are using like AI and vibe coding and things like that to just not learn anything and just spit some random crap out and whatever else. And that's what I mean when it makes dumb people dumber. But smart people are using it as leverage and as an advantage to sharpen their skills, get smarter, get better, get faster.
I want to pivot back to hitting or way past surpassing $1 million in revenue. I think this is really cool. We work with a lot of shops, especially in Fabric, around, you know, 500K or so too. There's a good subset of, you know, 250 to 500. I'm sure you remember that time. It's difficult doing a lot of things. Can't really hire yet. You know, a couple of friends, maybe part-time, this or that, just scraping by. And the goal is to be able to get to the million. Sometimes we'll ask, what are the things that worked really well? I kind of wanted to go the opposite. Like, were there things that you wouldn't have done to be able to hit either the million faster, or looking back on that journey, you were like, oof, I shouldn't have done that. We could have, like, that made my life harder or slower, or slowed us down.
The big one for me, I think, was I didn't hire soon enough. I kind of waited a long time. I was scared to do it. I had that mentality, like a lot of people do, that I'm not going to be able to hand this job off to someone because they're not going to be able to do it as good as I can. And especially in the early days of the business, my big thing was like, I wanted to be the best screen printer in the world, like, because I'm under the microscope all the time from the industry, right? Being on YouTube and social media all the time and just, you know, I'm constantly being watched. So my big thing was I want to be the best screen printer I possibly can be. And that was that. So that made it really difficult to hand over some of those tasks to somebody else, because I was just like, man, like, I've spent so many years and so much time learning this and getting good at it that, like, it's going to be impossible to get somebody else to get to that same level. Then I started learning that becoming the best screen printer in the world means becoming the brokest shop owner in the world. Like, nobody really gives a shit about how good you can screen print. And then, like, I had this happen in real time one day, because I used to, especially in the first days of getting my auto, because I was like, man, I can do so much more cool stuff with this thing. I'd be more precise, whatever. So I used to try and print these jobs with, like, you know, minimal to no register, no choke on them, like just dead nuts registration 100% of the time. And it's not realistic. And, but I used to try and chase this, and I was like fighting forever on this thing. You know, setup times were taking hours at times, and just, it made no sense. And we were fighting one day, and a customer came in and was like, oh yeah, we just, you know, the other shop we were at before, they're no longer doing business. We want to find somewhere else. Here's the shirt that they printed for us. We think this thing's awesome. They were so happy with this print. They thought it was the greatest thing in the world. This was one of the shittiest screen prints I've ever seen in real life ever. It was so bad. Like, so bad. It was just like full of fibrillation and stuff. It was undercured, cracking, falling apart. Like, just, it was horrible. And this guy thought this thing was amazing. And I was like, man, that sucks. That pisses me off, because I spend so much time getting so good at this, and people think that this is a good product. And so I tested this one day with the next customer that was coming in. I produced the shittiest print I possibly could on purpose. I set my press up in the worst way possible. I just butchered this thing, and he came up to pick up his order.
A little 3D effect.
It was super bad. And I even printed it on like a bad shirt that I know is like really bad for fibrillation and stuff too. And it was horrible. The opacity was bad. Everything about it. I hand this guy this shirt, and he was just pumped. He's like, man, these things look awesome. He was just like, he was so stoked. And I looked back at my employees, I just shook my head. I was like, fuck's sakes. And then I handed him the box of shirts that we actually printed for him that were better, obviously. And he was just like, oh yeah, these are better. And that was that. And after that, I was just like, man, all right, we gotta change things around here. So I started learning that, like, being the best screen printer in the world is not the move. And that's what took me so long to start hiring people for those first couple of years, because I just didn't think people would be able up to the task. And then I started realizing, well, reclaiming screens, anyone can kind of do that. That doesn't really play a huge part in the process. So I'll hand that off. And then that was, yeah. And then I passed off like the ink mixing and just small tasks, and worked my way up to eventually like getting the, you know, getting the trust to let go of the screen printing portion of it. And now, like, I don't print shirts at all. I printed some shirts yesterday, and that was like the first time in months that I even touched the press.
Can I ask you something? Can we pause on this for a sec? Okay, so you learn that customers don't care as much as we do about being the best printers, right? Yet you still want Rogue, your company, to print everything that you intake. Don't you think that if you would have acknowledged that sooner and recognized that other people can print, you would have subbed stuff out and worked on sales?
No, I still don't like subbing stuff out, because our 80% is still better than most people's 100. I'll say that without shame. Our level of print is very, very high, and our expectations are super high. It's really, really good. And I've seen a lot of the stuff that comes out of contract shops that wouldn't even make it in our scrap pile.
But like, okay, Matt Marcotte is a pretty freaking good printer. Would you trust him?
Yeah, I'd trust him.
Okay. All right. Would you trust, well, no, like, if you got an order from Illinois, you wouldn't want to print it. You just have him. What about like Justin Lawrence? He's probably a pretty good printer. Would you trust him?
I haven't seen one of his prints up close. I wouldn't know. He owes me a shirt. He's owed me a shirt for like 2 years. I'm gonna call him out right now.
Okay. What other printers would you trust? Would you trust Scott from Kingscreen to print for you?
I would trust Danny Gruninger any day of the week. He can print anything of mine he wants. But he's great. He's like screen print Jesus. So I mean,
You know, you didn't say yes to Scott. Scott, if you're hearing this, Lee is calling you out. And Lee thinks that his Mamaki is better than your Mamaki, even though they're the same fucking thing.
Yeah, they're the same. But no, I can't let go of certain stuff. There's certain things like the end product I want to have our stamp of approval on it. My expectations are pretty high for a lot of things, and I don't like putting that out on somebody else. It just makes me nervous sometimes. And like, you know, we've done some stuff. We've started dipping into the promo market because that's stuff that like I have no interest in making. And so we've been farming out a fair amount of stuff for the past year, and like it's been a 50-50 experience. Some stuff has come back good. Some stuff has come back where I'm just like, what is this? And then I have to go back and yell at somebody.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steven, because it kind of challenges it on both sides. But that first hire, this comes up actually as a question quite often, is making the very first hire. How did you do it? Like, how was the leap for you? Was it, I just have to do it, I'm stressed out? Was it, let me try it with someone part-time and I could dip my toe in? Was it, you know, someone younger and they could do it for the summer? How did you, cause I think once you make the first jump, it's so much easier to start to realize the value and like where to play your chips.
Yeah. The first one, I went all in on it. I just said, you know what, I'm just going to go for it, hire someone full time and see how it goes kind of thing. Cause like we had more than enough money coming in to deal with it. And I was like, you know what, I've got money coming in from other sources as well. Like this is not my only business, not my only revenue thing coming in. So if shit happens and it goes wrong, I can still afford to pay this person other ways. So I'll figure it out. And yeah, so the first one came in and threw him in the mix right away. And after that, the second one came pretty quick. I think it came within like the first 2-3 months, something like that. The second one hit. And then after that, it was just like, I just started hiring people. Anytime something came up, I felt like we were getting, you know, friction in the workflow, I just throw another person in it. And it's getting easier as it goes.
Can I ask, Bruce, do you have any other questions? I want to ask a hard hitter.
How do you help someone be less focused than on the production side sooner? So you went through that experience that was more of like, it kind of hits you in a way. Do people need to hit that to realize it? Or is there something that you could say that helps give people see the light?
For me, it hit me super hard. Some people like it hits them, but it never really registers. I think like a lot of people just think like that's just how business is, and it's not. The biggest thing was the systemization of the business. That was the first thing I turned around. Once I turned that around, that's when I started being able to let go of more and more things and take further steps back and not have to worry about things as much. Like for me, it was, I think I had, what did I have at the time? 3 or 4 employees, and we had no systems, no nothing in place. And it was on a video where I got like super, super sick. I was down like bedridden for like 2 weeks straight, and the whole shop screeched to a halt. No one knew what to do. And like, I could barely even like pick up my phone to answer a text, never mind get in there and coach people on what to do. And that point I knew like, okay, this whole business is running in my head. This is not okay. I need to fix this right now. And then, so I was laying there sick. I was watching these lean videos and stuff and taking it all in. And after that, I recovered, got better, and was just like, okay, we're making changes, everybody. And I sat everyone down in the shop. We shut the shop down for like 3 days. We cleared the whole shop out. We did like a deep clean of everything. We got rid of every single thing that did not absolutely need to be there. And, we started from the ground up again, and it was like an overnight change.
Years ago, I had lunch with a mentor that he had run a much larger tech business. And I was explaining, I was just like really stressed out. I was doing too much. And I was really, really focused on product and design and aesthetics and stuff. And he, I'll never forget, he's like, well, do you want to be a designer in your business or do you want to be the CEO? And like, serious question, right? Because he's like, if you want to design, then you need to hire a CEO. And so you have to pick. And that was, it just reminded me of that conversation you had. All right, Stephen, what do you got?
I want to talk about the relationship between the growth of your business and the quality of your life. Someone just had a Shopify cha-ching going off. Is that
That's
you,
me.
Lee? Do you still have that ringtone?
Jeez. Oh, I love that ringtone. Every time it goes off, it's my favorite. Tone.
Lee, you've done a ton of work on yourself, both your mental health, your physical health. You've built a massive gym in your basement. And your business is like growing at a fast pace. How do you attribute the two together? Is there attribution to the together? Cause I do think there was a point in your life where it was like, go hard in business all the time. And those things were on the back burner.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of let myself go there for a little while. Got fat, this wasn't able to perform like I should have been able to. I thought I was performing, but I really, really wasn't. And turning that stuff around was night and day. Being able to obviously get my fitness in check helps get my obviously physical health in check, but got my mental health stronger as well in the process. And just like it built my ability to handle the nonstop flow of shit that sometimes hit you in business, right? Like just all the stress, all the pressure, all the stuff. Like, you know, I get up every morning, I jump in ice water for 4 minutes. So every morning I'm like, I've done something horrible. So the day is not going to get much worse from here. and then just, you know, start banging out stuff like that and working out whatever, and put myself through those paces that, you know, work seems easy after all that stuff. And, quality of life part of it, it goes up and down. It ebbs and flows. Like there's times where quality of life is super good, 'cause now I know I can like step away from the business for a day or two and like, it's not going to collapse without me and whatever else. I can do some normal people things. But at the same time, I put more and more on myself when I see I have that free time, and I kind of ruin it for myself. But like, I don't know. I love that stuff. Like, I feel like if I'm not going super hard at something, like I'm just wasting time. There's something, it's like an itch in my brain that has to be scratched.
I think there's something you said there is like, if I go hard in the gym, everything feels easier. My most successful days are when I run 6 miles before 7 a.m. or something like that. I'm just like, everything else is easy, right? And I think there's something to be said about tying, you know, your fitness to your business. I just don't think like a lot of us take it as seriously as we should. And I bet you if you were to look at the best businesses ever, their founders, CEOs are physically in great shape or have really, really good habits.
Most of them, yes, I would say. And like now it's to the point that I'm trying to like put this onto my employees as well, trying to get them into the same kind of programs and whatever. So for like the past couple of weeks, I've had one of them now working out with me twice a week. We just go do like a quick like CrossFit style workout for like 20, 30 minutes outside of the shop. And now I'm noticing like another dude has popped in, and we're trying to get the whole staff in on this. And if I can get this as a regular thing for the whole staff, I feel like, dude, I'm going to extend that building further and I'm going to put a gym in there for the whole staff. That'd be incredible. 'Cause like, man, if they're putting in that work that I am, like they're going to perform better and so on. And it's the whole business gets better.
But how do you create separation knowing that your business is literally in your home, right? Like how do you get lead time that's like not business focused? Like, do you have that? You don't.
I don't. I mean, like I get the odd bit, like I've had to learn to, I don't know, like I've had to learn how to like switch it off at times. When I feel like it's getting to be a little too much, I have to take like a day. But for me, thankfully, I'm able to handle quite a lot. So like that's like a once a month kind of thing where I got to just like, you know, park my ass on the couch, play some video games, watch some movies for a day and recharge and then get back to it. But otherwise, like having all this stuff at my disposal all the time, like I just keep pressing on the gas. And that's why we're growing as much as we are and why it's grown as fast as it has since I started, just because like I have all this stuff accessible at all times. So I just keep going and going and going. And every time I make a move, I see the results of it. So then I want to make another one and another one, another one. It's just like, it becomes an addiction almost. And that's my crack right there. Like I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do drugs or anything like that. But this is my addiction right here.
I like seeing that because you, and I appreciate you being more public about it and sharing those struggles. We talk about a little bit on the show with different guests, but, you know, a very difficult seasonal based business can be very tiresome and hard, mentally especially. So thank you for sharing those videos in the past.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's the stuff that I noticed during the early days of like, you know, the seasonality of the business and things like that. And that's where I almost enjoy when that happens, because that means I can like power super hard into like another project or something like that, where we can maybe strengthen up those weaknesses, which for us was the transfer business, basically, like where if we have slow seasons at Rogue Lab, Rogue Transfers is killing it for some reason, and so on and so forth. Or I have more time to put into videos or other projects, things like that. Like I've got the Rogue Academy thing. So I was able to, during one slow season, that was right around the Christmas slow season last year, I put a ton of time, put all that together and got it running. It's been awesome being able to do that.
Awesome. Thanks, Lee. Appreciate joining us and giving us an update of how things are all going. Good luck on the building too. Would love to be able to. I'm sure you'll be doing a very cool shop tour when that's live.
Yeah. What can we expect from you? Like, you're not making videos right now. We do love your videos. So we challenge. You know what, Lee? My challenge to you is make simpler videos. You don't have to make them so complicated because I think the shit you make is so cool.
Like, I make them super complicated. I've got one right now I've been working on for like 2 months.
It's crazy. I mean, the level of detail is insane. But what is near term? I know you're working on the shop, but what can people expect from you in the next 90 days? What is in the hopper? What's important to you? What can you talk about right now that we can hold you to a year from now?
So the next 90 days, for sure, I can definitely say I've got a pretty big, I've got like 3 videos that'll be out for sure. I've got a big one I'm working on right now with All Made in Sanmar. That should have been out already, but I've been so swamped with stuff, I haven't been able to edit it. And this is like my most ambitious editing filming project I've ever made by far. Cause we had like multiple cameras going for multiple days. So there's just like crazy amounts of footage to sort through. And then I'm want to try and put this together into like a different format style, which is something I've never done before too. So I'm kind of learning some different things along the way. Should be kind of cool. The other ones, they're shot. I'll be able to knock those out once that one's done. They're pretty straightforward. I've got another video coming in the next couple of days that's a little less enthusiastic. We're going to get into a topic about some stuff that happened industry related recently that I got to expose. I'm working on this app right now, which should
An expose.
It's going to be a bad one for somebody. I got that coming. Yeah, we got some.
Wait.
Oh, yeah. You want to get into that? I can get into that.
Is this the gang sheet thing?
This is the gang sheet thing. Yeah, it's.
Oh, boy. Gang sheet drama. I don't know. I just saw Lee ranting on his Instagram. Gang sheet drama. Gang sheet drama. Oof. Stay tuned for some gang sheet drama.
To give you like the short story of it is there's a popular sheet or a popular app on Shopify that you can build gang sheets with that like a lot of people who are selling DTF products on Shopify are using. And it was what we were using was kind of the backbone of our operation. Over time, the support of this app got worse and worse and worse and worse. And we just had recently a problem come up that was like financial with it that I was receiving no support on, like hitting the chat, hitting the support tickets like three times each day for a couple of days and no response. So finally, I got pissed off and I left a negative review on their Shopify app store page, whatever. And it was not a bad one by any means. It was straight up like just, here's my frustrations. This was fun going on, whatever. And typically like when people see a negative review pop up, then they'll like jump into action, right? Well, it went the opposite for this dingus. And he took it super, super personal and got like super butthurt about it and started just talking shit to me in my private Facebook DMs and things like that about it and whatever. And then like I updated the review afterwards to like reflect what had happened and kind of tell people like, this was super weird, this interaction. It was very unprofessional. And the next day I got kicked off the app. They essentially tried to shut down Rogue Transfers overnight for a bunch of bullshit accusations saying I was like abusing his staff and all this other stuff and blah, 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 blah. And a bunch of stuff that didn't happen. So I've got literally screenshots and receipts of every single piece of this entire thing from start to finish. So we're going to put this out there for everybody to see because this is ridiculous. Like people are trusting their business with somebody like this that's able to just pull the rug out from under you because their ego can't handle a negative review. That's insane. So Shopify is involved right now as well because this is obviously a big violation of a bunch of their policies and whatnot. And yeah, I'm going to be shedding some light on this situation here in the next couple of days. Sometimes I use my reach for good, but sometimes I got to use it for shit like this.
Don't get in the way of Lee Stewart. Thank God you.
Our industry doesn't have enough tea.
What's up with you Canadians, man? Jeez, where's the Canadian peacemakers? None of you guys so violent. Whew.
But yeah, so I gotta deal with that one a little bit just because yeah, that's it's a popular app that a lot of people use and stuff. And like, I'm not the first person this has happened to either. This is like the third or so time I think that someone's left a bad review and got it pulled out from them. So like, that's not okay. So dealing with that, and I'm also developing my own version of this app to live on the Shopify store now to compete with this fucking guy because like, obviously that's not a reliable solution for people. I started building it for myself just to gain more control And then this whole deal happened and I was like, all right, now this is not just for me. I'm going to put this out for everybody once this thing works right and I can get it up there so that I can compete and give people a more reliable solution. So that's my my focus right now is getting this project done. I've got it on my Shopify dev store right now. It's working. I've got all the bones there. Everything's functioning correctly. So now it's just getting all the pieces kind of put together and prettying it up a little bit and getting it on my store for a few weeks to test out. And then before we submit it to Shopify.
Lee Meta World Peace Stewart.
Yeah, it's a path I never thought I'd ever go down, but out of necessity, it's happening.
You crack us up sometimes. This is great. Lee, what's your what Facebook group hates you the most?
I think now a lot of the hate has diverted off of me the last little while because I haven't been making videos, but like there's that screen printing shittiest group, which like, man, I can't imagine how fucking bad my life would have to be to belong to that group and the shit that they talk about in there. But I was a big topic of conversation in there for a long time, which made me laugh for years and years. But now I think it's that focus has shifted from me to like the street warehouse guys. They seem to be the focus in there now. So they can enjoy that.
Hey man, they're pumping good content out. They're fucking killing it. Jealousy and flay, you know, it's the best medicine. So
I'm petty. I feed off of that stuff. I love it.
Thank you guys for joining. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.